Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. We're back again for another week of Wisdom of Solomon. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding that he provides. When we started out a couple weeks ago, we talked about the impact of the lack of vision, and we discussed that some more, a little bit more last week with regards to the simpleton, but we really didn't get too far into looking at the other half of the proverb that said, happy is he who keeps the law. So I thought this week we would take a look at what Solomon's referring to with regards to the law and the purpose of the law as Solomon defines it. Because for some people, if they don't understand the purpose or the reason for something like the law, they're going to dismiss it or ignore it at best. And in the worst case, they're going to violate it with maybe a much more detrimental result. We also want to look at what law Solomon is referring to, because keeping the law and then finding out it was the wrong one is definitely not going to make you happy. So what law is Solomon talking about, and what is its purpose? Well, Solomon gives us one view of it in Proverbs 13:14, where he says, the law of the wise is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. So Solomon's talking about the law of the wise, and that if you're wise like Solomon, this is the law you'll follow. Why? He tells us because it's the fountain of life, and the purpose of it is to turn us away from the snares of death. Now, I tried to get Moses in here with his tablets, but I couldn't do that. So instead, I thought, rather than me try and explain it, I'd let Dennis Prager give us a little bit of a overview of it. We've got a video from Prager University that I thought really helps understand the law, the Ten Commandments. So if you want to start that up for us, Jackson, we'll do that. And then after that's over, we'll come back probably after a commercial break and continue our discussion.
No document in world history so changed the world for the better as did the Ten Commandments. Western civilization, the civilization that developed universal human rights, created women's equality, ended slavery, created parliamentary democracy, among other unique achievements, would not have developed without them. As you will see when each of the Ten Commandments is explained, these commandments are as relevant today as when they were given over 3,000 years ago. In fact, they're so relevant that the Ten Commandments are all that is necessary to make a good world, a world free of tyranny and cruelty. Imagine for a moment a world in which there was no murder or theft. In such a world, there would be no need for armies or police or weapons. Men and women and children could walk anywhere at any time of day or night without any fear of being killed or robbed. Imagine further a world in which no one coveted what belonged to their neighbor, a world in which children honored their mother and father and the family unit thrived, a world in which people obeyed the injunction not to lie. The recipe for a good world is all there in these 10 sublime commandments. But there is a catch. The Ten Commandments are predicated on the belief that they were given by an authority higher than any man, any king, or any government. That's why the sentence preceding the Ten Commandments asserts the following: God spoke all these words. You see, if the Ten Commandments, as great as they are, were given by any human authority, then any person could say, who is this man Moses? Who is this king or queen? Who is this government to tell me how I should behave? Okay, so why is God indispensable to the Ten Commandments? Because, to put it as directly as possible, if it isn't God who declares murder wrong, murder isn't wrong. Yes, this strikes many people today as incomprehensible, even absurd. Many of you are thinking, is this guy saying you can't be a good person if you don't believe in God? Let me respond as clearly as possible. I am not saying that. Of course there are good people who don't believe in God, just as there are bad people who do. And many of you are also thinking, I believe murder is wrong. I don't need God to tell me. Now, that response is only half true. I have no doubt that if you're an atheist and you say that you believe murder is wrong, you believe murder is wrong. But forgive me, you do need God to tell you. We all need God to tell us. You see, even if you figured out murder is wrong on your own, without God and the Ten Commandments, how do you know it's wrong? Not believe it's wrong. I mean, know it's wrong. The fact is, you can't. Because without God, right and wrong are just personal beliefs, personal opinions. I think shoplifting is okay. You don't. Unless there is a God, all morality is just opinion and belief. And virtually every atheist philosopher has acknowledged this. Another problem with the view that you don't need God to believe that murder is wrong is a lot of people haven't shared your view. And you don't have to go back very far in history to prove this. In the 20th century, millions of people in communist societies and under Nazism killed about 100 million people. And that doesn't count a single soldier killed in war. So don't get too confident about people's ability to figure out right from wrong without a higher authority. It's all too easy to be swayed by a government or a demagogue or an ideology or to rationalize that the wrong you're doing isn't really wrong. And even if you do figure out what is right and wrong, God is still necessary. People who know the difference between right and wrong do the wrong thing all the time. You know why? Because they can. They can because they think no one is watching. But if you recognize that God is the source of moral law, you believe that He is always watching. So even if you're an atheist, you would want people to live by the moral laws of the Ten Commandments. And even an atheist has to admit that the more people who believe God gave them, and therefore they are not just opinion, the better the world would be. In 3,000 years, no one has ever come up with a better system than the God-based Ten Commandments for making a better world, and no one ever will. I'm Dennis Prager.
Okay, so the question that we're going to have coming back after this break is the law really our adversary, or is it, as Solomon says there, to turn us away from the snare of death? We'll be right back with more Solomon on Blast.
I can't keep up with what's been going down. I think my two happy days waiting for World War III while Jesus slaves to the main.
All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast. We're not lawyers in love here, but we are talking about the law today. And as I asked before the break, is the law really an adversary? And I think the thing that we really, in our culture today, are looking at is a lot of people see it as something to be avoided, gotten around. But I think what we're really comparing is the law of the land versus the law that was created for man. And the law that Solomon refers to is the law that was created for man, whereas I think our society, our culture today, is always looking at the law of the land versus the law that was created.
I think you got to switch mics there.
He had the wrong mic.
Okay. Hey, good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Fred.
Morning, Jackson. You know, in this conversation, I think the point you're raising right away, when we start talking about the law, that the law can mean different things to different people. And, you know, there's the civic obligation version of law. And then there's the what the Bible would be speaking of would probably be classified better as an exploration of natural law.
Yeah, and there's
and how that plays out in society.
Yeah, there's a definition from one of the legal classes out there that's a educational system that says it's natural law, the system of universal moral and ethical principles that are inherent in human nature. And then there's what they call the positive law, which is the written law of a particular society at a particular point in time. And then they referred to the Constitution. So I think that's really
the, well, that's a good way.
Those are the two, a positive law and a natural law.
Yeah, and the positive laws are theoretically based on natural laws, and hopefully, but they're not always positive law, I guess, is not always that positive, right?
Right.
To the average citizen.
And I think that's
and that's what you mean by a rivalry, you know?
Yeah.
We see, for example, a sign that says 55 miles an hour. Yeah. You know, that sign is a challenge to our desire to get home faster. So, but positive in the sense that it keeps order.
And, right. If everybody ignored it and drove whatever speed they wanted, then it would create a lot of chaos in society. And but I have to ask, the question is, have we forgotten that the laws that are created by man, these positive laws, are really based on the laws that were created for man, which is the natural law?
And I think when that gulf expands between the two, I think this is where you find oppressive governments and the dictatorships and that kind of thing that everybody should fear, actually.
The comments that Prager made in that particular in that video, that you end up with a situation where the law, natural laws don't apply, only the laws that somebody creates, and then they can create whatever they want, and people end up, like you said, dead.
Well, and speaking of rivalry, it becomes a natural rivalry between natural law and positive law. They take on their own rivalry. And many times people, they assume they're both the same thing and they don't. And I think they view that idea, you know, for example, I'll tell you in Christianity, I think one of the misunderstandings you run into frequently is someone is taking some of the statements by the Apostle Paul about legalism. And they assume somehow that means that he's shooting down all these natural laws that God revealed through the Old Testament teachers and prophets and through Moses. And I think it's an extremely convoluted view of it, because natural law is still just a revelation of God's nature, who he is, what he thinks, what he requires. Exactly like Prager explained, it's not merely laying down, civic obligations on you. It's about you understanding who he is and what he wants from you and how to properly relate to him and your fellow man.
Yeah, because society really is a fragile connection of people. And when that connection, which is usually the laws that are put in place for that society, when those connections disappear or are corrupted, society degenerates fairly rapidly.
And people that have no respect for natural law, then they assume that they're going to empower themselves with these quote-unquote positive laws, these civic obligation laws, and somehow they're going to pick up all this moral and ethical slack. And that's one of the reasons why corporations probably and government agencies spend so much time re-educating their employees with politically correct courses,
Yeah,
how
ethics.
To think this way, how to act this way, because I think they're subconsciously, anyway, they're actually trying to fill the vacuum of the fact that there seems to be no regard for natural law.
Yeah, and I think that when we're living in a culture where most people see the law of the land superseding that natural law because they don't believe in it, whether that they don't have a belief
in
God.
Well, again, the inner sense that there is such a thing as right and wrong, when we're talking about natural law.
Right. But we have this culture that's thrown out God in a lot of cases, doesn't believe God exists, that we aren't created in his image, we just came to this point through evolution. Then it follows that there can't be any laws that were created by a creator, which leaves you with man creating his own laws for himself and ignoring the natural laws.
Yeah, this reminds me of an article I read, you know, a while back that someone, you know, of course, a lot of it, they're going for shock, but they basically asked the question, did you know that Moses plagiarized Hammurabi's code, you know, the law of Moses? Mm-hmm. Now, Hammurabi was the king in Babylon about 300 years, more or less, you know, before Moses was leading the Israelites and or leading them out of Egypt. But, you know, this idea that Moses just somehow, you know, I guess those Egypt and Babylon were really physically not that far apart. In those days, right, it would have been quite a trip. But the idea that, you know, he was just collecting all of these statutes and concepts and couldn't wait for his day to put them in play, it's ridiculous. I mean, this is the complete divide. One is statutory, you know, the positive law. That's kind of, you know, and I know I'm making too light of this, but basically he didn't want people walking their dogs and having them do their business on people's lawns. Right. That's the essence of those laws. And it was civic law, how to behave in public. But Moses' laws have everything to do with, you know, the inner person, who you are, how to, you know, how not to be a detriment to yourself, to society,
right,
and how not to displease God, basically. You know, it's also interesting about the law of Moses. It's framed mostly in negative, in a negative
connotation. And maybe that's why
thou shalt not. It doesn't say be a nice guy. You know, just be honest. It says you shall not bear false witness. Why do you think that's the case, Doug?
Because I think he's directly addressing our natural state, and we understand, I think, more so that is our natural tendency, right, is to do those kind of things. And so he's addressing it specifically. This is what you shouldn't do to overcome that aspect of your natural.
He's laying down moral boundaries, not, you know, don't you know, don't spit on the sidewalk. You know, he's laying down moral boundaries about how to handle our own impulses and tendencies, you know, before they manifest into some kind of behavior.
He's basically pointing out, here's the things that you're going to do. Don't do them.
Right.
Exactly. Before you even get there.
Before you get there, think about this and don't do it.
And I think one of the things that I see, at least in the culture, is we think a lot that these old laws, even though they're natural laws, we think they're obsolete. And you see that kind of attitude that people think, well, they're for a different time, different type of people. People are much more evolved today than they were back then. And so we can ignore those, or we can change them as we choose. And the problem is, like you just said, those original laws were for man's nature. And as we know what Solomon says, there's nothing new under the sun. And he's referring to man's nature in that case, that those laws do still apply entirely.
And these laws will always be foundational to every ethical and moral position somebody wants to assert. Like when the framers of the Constitution, you know, the Declaration of Independence, all the forefathers, they didn't just get together and say, we just want another country. Tough. We're here. You're over there. You know, get out. They had to sit down, and they had to frame amongst themselves a case based on natural law. And, you know, right now I'm looking at some of the, you know, some of the papers and all of that. And you realize they were absolutely glued to the idea that we have to make our case in these terms. If we cannot justify our rebellion or our revolution based on the natural law, then, you know, we actually deserve to be judged as insurrectionists.
We're just being brats.
Being brats. Yeah, we're just. So, I mean, that's why it's important for Americans at some time in your life to study the Constitution, because you realize they weren't just out there trying to do something different. They felt that if they didn't have the moral impetus of natural law, that they would have been evildoers fundamentally, and they would have been rebels against the crown. Mm-hmm. But they felt natural law was on their side, that the inalienable rights of a person, that all men are created equal, and all of these things that were eventually, you know, referenced for every great idea of liberty, including freeing slaves, you know, later, that these ideas had to be bigger than man. And they absolutely believed they came from God, you know, like as Prager pointed out.
And I think we still end up in this position of the law being an adversary. And that, I think, in and of itself is what makes our environment today, our culture, so, I guess, anti-establishment, the man, the people in charge, is we always look at, well, they're the ones making the laws, and the law is bad.
Well, how many times have you even heard that about the Bible? And it's usually, a freshman or sophomore in college that had just had a course with an atheist professor, you know, and they quote a couple verses. They're always the same verses too. You'd think these guys, if they were smart enough, they could diversify a little bit, at least read it a little bit and come up with a little, you know, something fresh. But they're always using the same statements, and they're always trying to make it look just a bunch of men got together and, wrote these hard laws in order to keep people down and repress, you know, their natural, feelings and whatnot. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Anybody that's ever studied that knows that the Bible, you know, for example, I'm speaking of the revelation of the Bible and all the different statutes that are expressed and precepts, you know, 1,500 years, 40 different authors from all these different walks of life and all these different time periods serving under all these different kinds of world rulers and whatnot. I mean, the idea that it was just a bunch of guys got together around a table and made some oppressive laws, Doug.
Right. Well, I think when we come back, we'll look at what Solomon's view is, that what are we trying to avoid? What's the purpose of these laws with regards to the impact? What's going to happen if you don't follow the laws? So the question is, when we come back, what are those snares of death that he's talking about? We'll be right back with more Solomon Advice.
Breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law. So much for the golden future, I can't even start. I've had every promise broken, there's anger in my heart. You don't know what it's like, you don't have a clue. If you did, you'd find yourself doing the same thing too. Breaking the law.
All right, Judas Priest, breaking the law. Well, that's kind of what we're heading into here. What happens when you do break the law? And I think with regards to Solomon's proverb that says the whole point, the purpose of these laws that are in place, these natural laws, are really to keep us away from the snares of death, as Solomon says. And if you've ever looked into what a snare really is, it's one of the simplest types of traps that can be created to catch animals for food. They've been around for centuries. The Indians used various types of snares to catch traps way before there were high-tech guns and everything else that is available now. Their construction is really very simplistic. It's a loop of wire or something to be able to create a loop, and their operation is really simplistic. You just set them up on a path where you've seen animals before, or obviously looks animals go there, and you can set up a number of them very easily without having, and they don't have to be constantly monitored. So they're kind of a self-harvesting method. So you can increase your chance of catching something. And unless an animal has a good reason to act to the contrary, it takes the path of least resistance. So this principle is what makes these snares so effective. If they're a lane of travel that they use over and over again, that's where you put the snare. And if they travel there, they walk into the snare, and they have no idea they're in trouble typically, until it's too late, the snare gets around their neck, strangles them, or they can't run away until once it's tightened around their neck. And I think this snare that Solomon is talking about has the same principle. It applies to us in our lives. We always take the path of least resistance, if you really consider human nature. And we typically don't have any idea we're in trouble until it's too late. And the result is we end up strangling ourselves to death in a struggle to get out of the very situation we put ourselves in.
I think the whole idea of snare, Solomon is really saying that the law in the Bible that's built on natural law is more than just civic law, in that there's a cosmic element to it.
Right.
It's
an unseen.
There's an unseen dimension. There's, you know, to borrow another word, karma element to it, right?
Right.
You can get away with things, but one day if you just completely dismiss, you know, the idea of right and wrong and good and evil in the universe, one day there's going to be a snare out there that's going to snag you. And it's not, it may be completely outside of the purview of authority. It's just you against the universe.
Yeah.
And one day what you do, who you are, how you live, what you value is going to come out in the wash. Now, I don't think there's an easy formula or science to that. I think it's way more complicated than just that. But he's still suggesting that that natural law vindicates itself, in a sense, right?
Right. That there, you may think you got away with it, but you didn't. Versus, okay, you can get away with driving over the speed limit quite
right.
a bit, and maybe forever you get away with it.
All you have to do, you know, whenever the police, TPD has the vans out there, you know, go. You know,
doesn't
the Arizona Daily Star tell you where they're going to be that
Actually,
day?
Actually, they're all gone now, right? We got rid of those laws.
Oh, even the vans?
Yeah, even the vans.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
no,
you can go back to speeding, Fred.
Nobody told me. You know, all this time I've been driving the speed limit. The point is that there's a self-policing dimension to it, that it's not just having somebody impose, like a civic law, impose over you. But here's a question that I would have for you. Are there times when the law, for however you want to view it, is actually more oppressive than helpful?
I think that if it's man's law, I think that that's probably the case, that when it's civic law, it's the positive law, that it can be much, much more oppressive than intended. But I think if it's natural law that God has created.
Well, in other words, again, like we were saying, I guess when there's a divide and they start to drift from each other and positive law no longer respects natural law, I guess positive law will become an albatross, right?
Right. It can become that way. And you see that. Just look at the number of federal regulations that are put on the books in this country on a yearly basis. And a lot of times they're there because they're trying to fix a problem that some other law created.
Now, here's one thing. When people are always trying to get around the law, they always assume in their own minds they're really doing the right thing, and the law they're breaking shouldn't be there, right? But that's a flawed idea in a person. Oh, I'm really doing the right thing. I just don't respect this unjust law.
Right. And if a law is unjust, it definitely applies that it's burdensome to a society.
Well, I mean, let's kind of bring this down to maybe some people that we might recognize, you know, in our culture today. Someone asked the question, for example, about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton seems to be, even according to most news sources now, in trouble, right? They get more and more information on the email server scandal. This is nothing to do with Benghazi and all the other potential scandals. But somebody asked the question. It was one of those talking heads. And they asked this question on one of these cable networks. They said, is Hillary too big to fail?
And they weren't talking about her physical size, right?
Yeah, exactly. They weren't talking about her pantsuit size, Doug. They were talking about Hillary. In other words, the political scene is such today. There's so much rancor. In order to bring down a big player like her, would that just cause irreparable damage between, you know,
our political system?
Political,
like the banking system. It was exactly too big to fail, right?
Exactly. I think that's the idea they were playing with, you know, between these two camps, and and America's going to get hurt more because she's such a polarizing figure, will be hurt more than just kind of letting her skate. Now, this is the question they're asking. I think a lot of people have an idea, but the idea, what they're really saying is, are some people bigger than the law? Would holding her to the letter of the law be a bad idea because of other implications?
And I would have to say, no, she needs to go down, because I think you could take the example and go back to Nixon, right?
Yeah.
That there was a lot of that same thought, that this is going to ruin the presidency, the office of presidency, if he were to have to.
Yeah, that's what Nixon supporters were saying at the time, right? When they were starting the impeachment proceedings and all these other things that he cut short by resigning. But yeah, that whole argument was out there. And, you know, and people thought, I remember, we were little kids, but I remember hearing the discussion that, oh no, if you do this, people will never respect the presidency again and America will be damaged. And you've given in to all those anti-war protesters. And, you know, there was something about our political system that found its balance. I agree with you. I think, you know, it's funny. Hillary tweeted out a play on words using that phrase herself one day. She said, are these people, I think she's talking about Wall Street people, too big to jail? Oh. Well, I things have a way of what goes around comes around. And is Hillary too big to jail? No, I don't think so. I think the system will actually be invigorated by that and refreshed. That yeah. People will get a little confidence in it, that there are not people out there that do whatever they want. So she seems to be a classic example of somebody that says, these boundaries aren't for me. I can just skate these and then have people out there in front of her saying, it's better for America if we let her skate. It's better for America if we let her skate. I mean, to me, it just seems like at some point, the cosmic realities of right and wrong are going to have to come into play here.
Right. And when you look at the fact that there is trouble out there when you violate these natural laws, from a physical law or the positive law, the laws that man creates, a lot of times there is physical consequences, and you can see that. And it's more visible. But I think the natural laws are really kind of like the white lines that are on the road. They tell us what the limits are, but they don't really prevent us from crossing them. The expectation is that we have to make those choices ourselves. Whereas if you put up guards, you put fences up along the side of the road, then you kind of know there's the physical barrier is there. And a lot of times people say that, you know, the law is a hedge, it's a boundary. And I think it's more of, actually, rather than being visible, it's invisible, like those white lines. We're just being warned that there are limits to how far off the road we can go, but it's still our choice to make those.
Well, you know, I think with Solomon talking about these consequences of dismissing what you're calling natural law, or the law that Moses built on, is that, and this bothers a lot of people about the Bible, and basically he's issuing with this statement an apocalyptic warning. Mm-hmm. He's basically saying when natural law is dismissed and it's, you know, completely pushed aside, that there's bad things are going to happen.
Right. And
they're going to happen to an individual, but not just an individual. They will collectively happen to a society.
Yeah, and I think what you see is a tendency to have a contempt for the law when it, and that kind of leads you off that path, because contempt is really, it's deliberate disobedience or disregard for the law. You see that in the courtroom settings, that somebody's being held in contempt. Well, they're showing blatant disobedience or disregard for the law. And I think when, like, you asked, well, what if the laws are too onerous? I think when they become that way from a man's law, the positive laws, you end up with people that have a contempt for the laws.
Okay, let me give you another contrast scenario. people say, well, what's the difference between George Washington and Fidel Castro? You know, they just rebelled against their controlling government.
They were both revolutionaries.
They're both revolutionaries. And so why do we celebrate George, you know, cutting down the cherry tree? And other than Sean Penn, you know, nobody seems to give Fidel a break. What would you say about that?
Well, I think if you...
Weren't the American revolutionaries challenging the laws of England?
But it goes back to what were those challenges based on, like you mentioned earlier. And I think you just have to look at the results of the revolution and what the outcome really ended up being. You've got 30 years of, well, probably 60 years of Fidel over there controlling that country. Who knows how many people he killed in that time frame.
Actually, as you're talking, I'm looking it up right here in front of me.
Okay. Beauty of the
here, I'm going to answer the question for, I guess, my own question here. I guess they say that they estimate just in the first 30 years of his regime that he's killed, political prisoner-wise, up to 30,000 people. So it tells you, this goes back to our beginning, right?
Right.
Natural law and positive law have a little divide there, right? Respecting human rights, inalienable rights, you know, the God-given freedoms and liberties. And so apparently that's not high on his agenda.
Right. And Prager brought it out in that video or that clip also that 100 million people had been killed due to governments and man's laws, and that didn't even include the people that were in the wars that resulted from those particular conflicts, World War II, World War I. So it is a detriment to society. There is a consequence to it. When you violate these laws, you don't follow the natural laws, you end up with situations like we see with Fidel and any other dictator around the world.
Well, I just found this classic statement by Reagan about this very thing. I guess he's weighing in. He said, "The city of man cannot survive without the city of God. The visible city will perish without the invisible city." And I think that's basically what he's saying, right?
Yeah.
He's saying when you have a nation whose laws have become devoid of the moral foundation of natural law, you're asking for eventually exactly what Solomon is saying. You're stepping into a death and destruction scenario.
Now, when you look at the Constitution and the Magna Carta, which is what our Constitution was based off of, it goes back to England. William Blackstone, who was a very famous legal mind back in the early 1700s, his comment was, "No enactment of man can be considered law unless it conforms to the law of God."
Mm.
So it's those very same thoughts.
Ideas, right?
Yeah, and I think that has just carried through over and over, that when you create these laws that are in opposition to the law of God, then you have this oppressiveness, a society that begins to crumble, and the culture ignores the natural law that needs to be there when laws are based on anything but that.
Now, in another sense, and to a lesser degree, since we're talking about a spiritual sense of oppression, I guess Jesus was saying when religious law becomes devoid of the heart and soul of its meaning, the spirit of the law, then it takes on a different kind of impact. It's not the positive, inspirational, challenging, I want to be a better person. It makes you just oppressed and
legalistic.
Legalistic, right? And burdened.
It becomes the negative aspect that we see the man-created laws that we have in place. So, yeah, it's definitely a basis for a snares of death, a degradation of society when you avoid following what's been put in place from a natural aspect. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to finish up this last segment. Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. Now I want to
understand. I have done all good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong. Was I unwise to leave them open?
All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast. Doctor, my eyes, what have they seen? Well, Solomon says that when you follow these laws, they really are a fountain of life. And I think that's kind of the whole summary of this, is that it isn't a negative aspect to have a set of laws, the natural laws, the Ten Commandments. And Prager points that out, that most people see, if they really look at our society, the democratic society, the women's rights, those things prevail more in our culture, in our society, than anywhere else, because we have a set of laws that are based off of the natural laws, the Ten Commandments.
Now, Jesus added to this, and now we're talking about wisdom, right? Our whole thing is the wisdom of Solomon, but Jesus made a very interesting statement. He said, wisdom is proved right by her children. So, you know, or another way to put that is, a good tree can bears good fruit. So when law is good, and when positive law, or, you know, civic law is tied to, in a positive and an honest way, to natural law, it has good results.
Right.
And so, you know, this is why it's important for people to make these distinctions, because, like I said earlier, even Christians make wrong assumptions about the law of Moses and its impact on people, but the proof is in the pudding. It's positive impact, and it shows you good laws actually really do produce robust and prosperous people.
I like a quote from C.S. Lewis. He said, you cannot make men good by law, but without good men, you cannot have a good society. So, and that's really what we're trying to achieve, is a good society. And having good law
is a reflection of people that have a moral compass.
Yeah, the law is going to have positive effects. And that's kind of what we started with, is that we don't see the law as being something positive. We have a warped view that restricts us and inhibits us from seeing that positive aspect of it.
Well, it's Jake Feinberg
here. Jake. Good
on
morning,
Solomon.
Jake.
Morning, Jake.
Oh, guys, so good to see you both. Love the show, guys. You guys are doing heavy work. But I've said this for a long time. I've said it since May, that Bernie Sanders will become the Democratic nominee because Hillary is going to get embroiled in, she's going to get weighed down in this debacle of the emails. Okay, now the guy who is in charge of the FBI is a deeply faithful Christian named James Comey. Now, the question is, you're talking about a rule of law, abiding by the law. There's a lot of political pressure within that, but if Comey wants to indict Hillary Clinton, and then the Attorney General of the United States, Loretta Lynch, says no. Again, that's just the latest example. We can go back to the W years and find good holier than thou Christians like Mark Foley texting pages. Okay, so we're talking about, right. I guess what we're talking about is this: you guys lead your life, we all lead our lives a certain way, but it doesn't work if the truth isn't there. You know what I'm getting? Comey's religion really has nothing to do with it. It's just, I know he happens to be a Christian.
I haven't even heard that.
Right.
That part of it.
You know, he's a man of faith. That's great.
Right.
But if, listen, I think Hillary is a tainted candidate. I'm a Democrat. I like Bernie. But if Comey comes with charges and then Loretta Lynch says, no, this is too much political pressure, doesn't that again just sort of water down
it the creates truth contempt
there's no rule of law,
right
there's no, I agree with you. I think Hillary not to be brought to be viewed, as we were talking earlier, as someone who's too big to fail, like those banks were, that they're fundamentally saying that we've given up on the process.
Right.
And they held Richard Nixon even more so than Bill Clinton. Richard Nixon resigned, you know.
Right.
And Clinton kind of went through the kangaroo circus that that thing became or whatever.
People also felt that there was a direct political debauchery with Nixon as opposed to the personal life of somebody just putting, I mean, Livingston, we have, you know, Vitter, those cats, you know, everyone's had that. But I think that more to the point, you guys talk in a very honest and innocent way about this, of following this rule of law. But if the people that we are electing into power and that have the power don't apply to those rules, then there's a despondency that creeps in amongst the
general
public. That's
and,
all I'm saying.
Right.
And that was one of our points that we were making. That,
and I think that's why you have to see things from the positive side, and that when the law is enacted properly and justice prevails, then that positive view comes out. Because Solomon even says in Proverbs 7, he says, "Keep my commands and live, and my law as the apple of your eye." And when you really look into what is the whole reference to that apple of the of your eye, that's something that you feel is very precious and you appreciate it. And I think when the law is enacted or it's distributed, applied appropriately, it becomes very precious. People see that it does work. It has a positive aspect, and it's not seen as something negative in all cases. And I think that's really what we're trying to point out, is there are a lot of positives when the law is followed. Mm-hmm. And Solomon's point of it is an apple of your eye, when you see the positive aspects of it, you're going to appreciate it. You're going to keep it as something that's precious and needs to be upheld. And I think when you look at it from the one greater than Solomon, Jesus' aspect of it, he said, in Matthew 5:17-18, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, nothing in the law is going to pass until all of it's fulfilled." And I think that's really the ultimate law, is the law that Jesus is here to be the one to fulfill it. So that's about it for this week. We'll be back again next week, hopefully. Until then, keep thinking wisely.